Coming up next, WWER presents Your Care Partners, a show dedicated to providing support and education to our community about caregiving. Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home. Experienced professional caregivers Jill White and Marty Allman have casual conversations about care, offering advice and tips to help navigate caring for others. Jill White is a certified dementia practitioner and an Alzheimer's Association facilitator for caregiver support groups with over 30 years' experience working in long-term care. Marty Allman is certified as a master trainer for the Best Friends approach to Alzheimer's. She is a certified psychiatric nursing assistant with over 20 years' experience working in long-term care.
Hi, welcome to WWER 88.1 FM. I'm Marty Allman.
And I'm Jill White.
And we are your care partners. Today, our topic is going to be family dynamics when you're caring for a family member, an aging parent or sibling, and what that looks like, the reality, and hopefully we'll be able to give some advice. Both Jill and I have had experiences with caring for family members and dealing with family dynamics. So where do we start?
Right. At the very beginning.
Yeah. So I'm going to actually give out a resource that I recently found that I think is really good. And it's a book called The Boomer's Guide to Aging Parents. And it's written by Nicole Davis. And that's Nicole with an M, not an N. She and her husband found themselves in a caregiving position. She is a lawyer and a nurse, and her husband is a psychologist, I believe. Might be a psychiatrist. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that resource out there. Seems like a really good book, because let's face it, we don't study this stuff in school. Yeah, we don't study how to take care of our parents in school.
Yeah.
So, and everything that comes along with that. And I'm going to start out with like a little story or a scenario. Sometimes people find themselves, you know, caring for a loved one because of an emergency situation. Maybe somebody's fallen or had a stroke or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if that person was wise and put things in place as to who's to care for them and, you know, who's to take charge if something, you know, were to happen and they became incapacitated, that if you have siblings, person who's charged with caregiving for that person has siblings, then you've got family dynamics involved. And in a perfect world, you know, everybody works together seamlessly to take care of that person and, you know, shiny people.
Right.
But it's not always like that. And that's the reality.
Seldom is. And I think none of us plan for the unexpected, even though it kind of should be in the realm of what is to be expected. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether it's denial that takes over most of us or not, but usually it's a catastrophic moment where something has to be done instantaneously. Mm-hmm. And we've not planned about it, thought about it, researched it. So that's what we're hoping to provide here is get ready. Maybe you'll never have to take the trip, but be ready to go on it just in case.
Right. And in most families, I'm not going to say every family, but in most families, that main responsibility falls to the oldest child.
Or oldest female child, usually.
The actual caregiving, yes, falls to the oldest female child.
Yeah.
Family. But, you know, look at your family. You know, who is the best one to actually do it? Could be the oldest child. Maybe the oldest child is very responsible and wise when it comes to finances and things like that. But maybe there's a member of the family who's always been patient and kind, and maybe a more empathetic person.
Or and obviously availability. A lot of people, especially boomers, many are still working. Many are still very involved in other things. It's, you know, it's life disrupting eventually when you take on that role of caregiver, and it needs to be discussed. Or in an ideal situation, it can be shared.
It can. I've seen it happen with families, you know, and you brought something up too, like maybe the oldest child lives in Alaska, but the parent lives in Virginia.
Right.
You know, it's who lives closest to that parent.
Yeah.
And so now I'm going to dig into, what if you have a family member who actually already lives with that parent? And maybe that person had gone through a rough period of time in their life, and they moved in with mom and dad to kind of pull their life back together, and then they just stayed.
Yes. And you and I have, you and I have both had that personal family experience to have to deal with. And it's very, very difficult.
It is difficult. And, you know, what you may hear today on this podcast may shock you, but this is reality. And I can bet you, you know, there's a lot of families out there that go through that. They just don't talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, we found out about many, many of these instances because when we, through our former employment, when we were moving people into a communal living facility, you get to know the families real well. But yeah, it can be tough. Very tough.
Can be tough. And I'm just going to share a little bit of my backstory. So I had a sibling who had moved in with my dad. And my dad had, you know, asked her to move in. He felt like, you know, he was helping her in a way to, you know, kind of save some money. And then it would help him as well. You know, maybe she could cook some meals and do some things around the house. And my sibling had a full-time job. So when it came right down to when my dad really needed more care during the day, or someone just looking out for him during the day, she ended up not being that person. Even though she lived with him, you know, she couldn't walk away from her career, her job. So she was there at night and she did help, but that created an interesting dynamic when I kind of quit my job, and my background is in caregiving and healthcare. So it was kind of, you know, my dad was like, I want you to come take care of me. Well, okay. What does that look like? And that's something that, you know, everybody needs to think about. Because now you have a sibling living in that house, and then you're coming to that house to work. Right? And they have their things and their items and their ways of doing things. But now you have to go and kind of change that up to make it better for that parent. You know, make the house a little bit safer, change some routines. And so you're not only, you know, learning how to take care of this parent, but you're...
Well, you can be, depending on the family dynamics, you could be seen as, you know, you're coming in and trying to take over.
Yes.
And stepping on their toes, and you're disrupting, you know, whatever's happening there. And yeah, it's definitely...
it gets messy. Transition.
Very messy.
It gets messy. And so, you know, what you and I, Jill, have always said, as long as we keep the person we're caring for's wishes at the forefront, you always have that to fall back on.
Always. Absolutely. Their care and their happiness and their, you know, stability.
So, yeah, that was part of my... my caregiving experience and learning how to navigate, you know, another person in the house, but not necessarily that part being that person being a part of the day-to-day care.
Your caregiving for your dad, there were a lot of other levels that were piled on top of that to make it work within the dynamics of that home. And mine was a little different. Unfortunately, I actually had to have a sibling removed from my parents' home before my parent was allowed to basically go home to die. She was on hospice at that point. And there had been some social services. There'd been issues in the past. And that was just heartbreaking and hard. And so, yeah, there's a lot of things you may never believe you'll be faced with. So keeping the communication lines open as much as possible. I always say get everybody in the same room if that is possible, or do a Zoom meeting, because it needs to be whoever all the family members are that are going to be touched by this. You know, they need to know what's going on and who's responsible for what, and hopefully they're supportive of the person that's charged with the actual caregiving piece.
Right. And that, you know, if it is a large family, I mean, we did have a large family. So, you know, having a single sibling and just going back and forth, and that can be really difficult. But there are resources out there.
Yep.
You know, you can probably speak to a local aging agency. It's usually the Agency on Aging in many communities throughout the United States. If you feel like a family member might be taking advantage of your aging family member, there are resources for that too.
And you know, Marty, it just popped into my head. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Sure.
I think to actually start it, there should actually be a prequel. You know, you should, as a family, hopefully the person that's going to be needing the caring, whoever that family member is part of this, but it should be kind of a group discussion and set these wishes in place before anything specific is really needed, so that you'll, like you said before, what are their wishes? What is that person's wishes? Mm-hmm. And let the whole family know from the get-go how you'll be proceeding depending on what occurs when.
Right. Determining whether or not a parent is able to create these wishes. You know what I mean?
But if they're not, then even more importantly, legal. That you have to do some legal work again before the actual need is there.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's when you can reach out to, there are resources in your area. And I would say Area Agency on Aging is probably the best resource to guide you in the right direction for that.
Yeah.
I agree. And just kind of going back, because this does happen, and this may be hard for some people to listen to, but a lot of times when someone becomes older and weaker, people can take advantage of them. Maybe it's not a family member, could be a neighbor, could be, you know, a friend or whatever.
Sure.
We've both seen that happen in the past too, where somebody unknowingly trusted someone to like pay their bills for them. And then all of a sudden they have control of their bank account.
Yeah.
You know, and what do you do? What do you do if you discovered this happened?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you put powers of attorney in place, but basically, because we've both been powers of attorney, it really does give you carte blanche to do whatever you want with that person's funds or money. It has nothing to do with how capable or incapable they are.
Right.
Once that power of attorney is in place, you can kind of take over and do what you want. We've both seen it. I've been involved in a couple of elder abuse, you know, financial elder abuse cases, and it's unfortunately too easy. So that's why making sure the choice is vital. You know, choose the right person. It doesn't have to be a family member.
True. It really doesn't.
No.
It really doesn't. What did they call that? Anyway, there's another name for it too. Okay. But, you know, various social services agencies can step in and be that for them.
Or a trusted friend or a trusted attorney. Accent on the trusted part.
right. You know, a resource to go to if you know this is happening to somebody, if you've discovered that that has happened to a family member where they've been financially abused, because let's just call it that, because that's what it
is. Yeah, it is.
You go to the police. You go to who you go to when you discover someone's being abused. You go to the police and you go to the Department of Social Services.
Yes.
And these are not pleasant things to think about, but this is the reality of caregiving. You know, some families, they have it together.
Yes.
And everything runs as smoothly as it can. But, you know, we're all made up of different people and cultures and backgrounds. And the reality is that sometimes this does happen. You know, let's just say that, you know, you have other siblings that can help you take care of your parent. Put a plan in place because you can't carry it all on your shoulders alone.
Too true.
So if you have siblings, you know, think about it. Think about the different skills. Every person has a skill or a unique part of their personality that they can bring to the table that can be of assistance. Even grandkids can do that. You know, when you're, you need somebody that you can tag team with when you're reaching that point of, I'm not sleeping at night. I'm not eating right.
Yeah.
I'm irritated.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to go on anxiety medicine. I mean, we could just list the things.
Yeah. Or so, you just, yeah. There aren't enough hours in the day. You know, somebody else can do the shopping. Somebody else
right.
can do some cleaning. You know, there's a lot of things that are involved with, you know, A to Z everyday care.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully you have a good enough relationship with siblings or other family members where you can, you can pull them in. And I did kind of want to touch on that. You had brought it up earlier about someone feeling like, oh, this person's just coming in and taking over and,
right.
you know, dealing with resistance and how do you, you know, how do you deal with the resistance of someone when you're caring for a person? Obviously you fall back on the wishes, but
yeah,
in that moment,
yeah,
it's really hard not to, you know, lash out and speak your mind and possibly get in an argument. And I'm going to say this, you know, try desperately not to do this in front of the person that you're caring for.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, and if it is a big family, we all have different roles in our families. That's what dynamics is about. But, you know, maybe one person in the family tends to be the mediator.
The peacekeeper, yeah.
Yeah, so appoint that person, you know, if two people are having a problem, it's like, okay, well, let's go talk to Diane. Let's get somebody else's opinion on this.
That's true. Out of us five girls, we do have that person in our
family.
We have the person in our family who's the comic relief.
There you go.
When things get really tense.
Yes, that's important.
Yeah. So look at your family and look at what skills and try to also remember that when you are on a short fuse and frustrated and think, okay, you know, this person does bring this to the situation and this person really does make mom happy or dad happy. And again, you know, Jill and I preach it over and over again, prepare because this stuff is going to happen.
Yep.
It's going to happen just like, you know, at any job or workplace, you know, you're going to have people you get along with better than others.
Sure.
You're going to have people you work with better than others. And how do you cope with that at work?
Yeah.
You don't have a choice.
And when it's siblings, it doesn't matter how old you are, you tend to revert right back to those family roles that you were in from the beginning. So it's important to know where your buttons are and try to avoid pushing other people's buttons.
Right. Just be aware of it. And that kind of leads me to, so when you become the caregiver for, let's just say, a parent or an older sibling, your roles change. And all of a sudden, this person who has been in charge and basically the boss of you your entire life.
Yes.
Now the role has changed. And how do you deal with that dynamic? Because you and I have talked about it in the past, it can swing the opposite direction where, you know, maybe a parent just gives up full decision-making and to the point where they don't do anything for themselves.
Right.
You know, how do you keep that medium? And my suggestion or my thoughts on that are keep them as involved as possible. If you're making financial decisions and if you're, you know, making decisions about maybe their home or what to do with their car, or, you know, that sort of thing. If you can include them, obviously, if you're the power attorney, you're going to make the ultimate decision, but help them
be a part of it at least.
Yeah, help them transition. Help them transition out of that being in charge role and respect the fact that they're losing control, a lot of control of their lives.
And you have to deal with a reversal of how you're feeling, because you're, you know, on the one hand, you're taking over to help and do more, but on the other hand, you may not even acknowledge the fact that you're experiencing loss and grief.
Right.
Over the situation and how it's changing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it affects you in so many different emotional levels. Mm-hmm. You should need to be aware of that and acknowledge it and try to work through it however able.
I've got sort of a funny but kind of sad story, but sort of funny when I look back on it. So my dad was in his 90s. His career, he was a pilot in the military, and he loved his car. And I came to visit one weekend, and I noticed some dents and scratches. And I was like, hey, Dad, like, where did these come from?
Oh, dear.
And he was like, oh, you know, I got distracted, and I kind of went off the road a little bit, and I went into a ditch. And I was like, okay, Dad, I think you should really kind of limit where you drive. And I mean, he had talked to his doctor, and, you know, he to just 5 miles away, really. That's about his radius at that time.
Yeah.
But he loved, my little nephew lived two blocks away, and he loved going to pick up my nephew, away from his school. And my dad, like, it brought him so much pleasure to go pick up my little nephew at school. It was like his thing. And to tell my dad that, hey, you got to stop driving and you got to stop picking Carter up at school. I mean, that was really hard. And when he got behind the wheel of that car, you know, it was like flying an airplane for him. Something he'd done his entire life. So that was a really hard, hard thing to do. And I was out with my dad driving one day.
Oh, dear.
And lo and behold, there was like a real big dip in the road. And I'm telling my dad, and of course I'm the kid, I'm telling my dad, hey, Dad, there's a dip in the road. Hey, Dad, you know, and he's not listening to me because I'm his kid and he's driving. Yes, sir. And there's a big dip in the road. And we hit that dip. And bottomed out in his car. Oof. And I, you know, just being a normal human being, kind of flipped out like, oh my gosh, what just happened? We need to pull the car over, you know, and I'm flipping out. And we got back home and he was like, okay, I'm ready. Aww. You know, and that was really tough, but that was an experience and a dynamic that we had. I probably should have driven that day. I probably should have said, Dad, you know, I'm more comfortable. I should have had the conversation and I didn't.
Yeah. It's important. Yeah, it's hard. It's so hard.
Right. And, you know, but I did have to say, you know, this is dangerous, not just for me and you, but it's dangerous for other people. And I think that was really hard for him to hear, but
of course,
you know, he was able to make that decision. He said, I would feel awful if I hurt somebody else.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah. But that's the dynamic, and that's an example of the dynamic. You know, here you are, you've always ridden in the car with your dad or mom, and they've always driven, and, you know, how do you handle that? And one of the things you can say is, it's just not me and you this affects. You know, there's hundreds of other people out here on the road, but those dynamics are so tough. You know,
for sure.
How you clean the house, how you do the dishes. Right? When you're a kid.
Yes.
Mom and Dad always instructed you to do things, you know, and here you are, you know, you're a grown adult and you're 15. Mm-hmm. Your dad's telling you, that's not how we load the dishwasher. Those things happen. And you've got to be able to have a sense of humor about it.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
I think you had a moment with your aunt one time, didn't you? Talk about that, where, you know,
quite a few moments.
Yeah.
My aunt she always had candles. She always had candles going all over the place. And, you know, I started seeing that some of them were getting you know, burnt down and further than they should have been. And we also had, oh yes, we had the case of the exploding eggs.
Yeah.
She was boiling eggs and had forgotten about them. And it was quite a mess in the kitchen. And yeah, it was, they were tough conversations, I think. And I think we might, I might've shared this before. There came a moment, and it was in her kitchen. It may have been right after the egg explosions. We kept modifying what she was, what she could do comfortably, you know, and I'd ask her, and she was usually pretty cooperative, even though she was very strong and independent. But at one point she just grabbed my shoulders face to face and said, "I don't want to get old." Yeah. At that point, I think she was 88. And I looked in her eyes, you know, we were like 3 inches apart, and I'm like, "Too late." And we both started laughing because, I mean, if you don't want to get old, you all know what the alternative is, right?
Right.
So getting old may not be easy, but it's just a different part of the journey. And preparing for it is the key.
Mm-hmm.
Getting through it, you know, mm-hmm. as we keep saying, prepare.
Yeah. And have your parachutes, and you know,
yes,
using your family members as part of the team,
mm-hmm.
and recognizing, here's another thing about family dynamics. I have older siblings. I have one sibling that's 12 years older than me. The dad, she has a different relationship with my dad, or had a different relationship with my dad than I did.
Sure.
So each person in the family has their own unique relationship with that person.
Awesome.
And you need to acknowledge that, because that was something that kind of caught me off guard as well.
Yeah. Because
I'd see my dad, you know, speaking to another sibling, and I'd be like, really? Like,
yeah,
I don't get to do that, you know, yeah. Or, yeah. And that can create some stressful moments.
Yeah. Discomfort or little sibling rivalry. I mean, there's mm-hmm. so many levels to all of this.
Yeah. And we would like to all believe that we're mature adults, and that's just not going to happen. But the reality is it is.
Yeah. I think when you're around your family, you're like 12 or 15 again. Or whatever the age was when you all started taking your own stand.
Right. And I think if you do have the ability to seek therapy.
Yes.
I don't think it's family therapy, but each person in the family, if they have the resources available to seek out therapy, they should, because you're not only caregiving for somebody, but you're grieving for that person.
Yep.
Because that person's aging, and you know, sooner or later, that person's not going to be around, and that person is losing the ability to be who they were. And so I think it's important to suggest to people, you know, look into the resources in the area. Are mm-hmm. there grief support groups are more for after someone passes, mm. but finding a good therapist that you can just go and vent to.
And I think caregiver support groups can be life-saving for the folks that are going through it. Because most, like we said before, it usually falls on one person's shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too heavy a burden for one person's shoulders to bear. But, you know, having that group experience and reaching out. And there probably should be counseling for family caregivers. Or the family of someone, you know,
right.
because it is a community effort. It's a community effort for everyone that touches that person's life,
mm-hmm.
family or friends or neighbors or church folks or whomever. You want to broaden your circle and include everyone in what's happening,
mm-hmm. as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
As a group facilitator for the Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Association. There are groups for almost anything out there.
That's for sure.
And it's not necessarily where you have to go somewhere, although I do suggest that if there is a group that you can meet with, it's just better to connect
for sure.
with people and read people's faces and emotions and experiences. But there's so many online support groups now for everything. And I bet you, I didn't look it up before we started the podcast. I'm sorry, but I bet you there is like a family dynamic support
group when you're not sure there is
when you're caring for someone.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of, you know, what other dynamics, you know, how can maybe the grandkids or great grandkids play into this support of, of caregiving? And, you know, usually grandkids bring their grandparents such great joy.
Yeah.
And if they are able, you know, it'd be good to schedule them to spend time with that
aging
person. And it also kind of gives you some moments,
a break
alone. Mm-hmm. And that grandparent can feel like they're contributing because they're watching the grandkids or
true
imparting wisdom, you know, on maybe a teenage grandchild or something like that. Well, here's one, and I know I've said it before on the podcast, but just because somebody in your family has been diagnosed with something, and maybe it's terminal or, you know, it's a long disease process, does not mean that your dynamic with that person changes.
True.
And I think sometimes we go into this thinking, oh, well, you know, I'm going to be Florence Nightingale and take care of this person and everything's just going to, you know, fall into place and be rosy. And I was talking about that, the dishwashing incident. Here I am washing dishes and there's my dad standing over me telling me how to do it. That dynamic didn't go away just because he was diagnosed with cancer.
True.
And he wasn't feeling good.
Yep. And I think that's like, we keep focusing on, be aware, educate yourself, get the information out there, make a plan before it's needed, even if maybe it's never going to be needed, but whether or not it's implemented, a plan needs to be in place with everyone that's involved.
Mm-hmm. And I was actually talking to Mary Arthur with Bay Aging, which is a great resource in our area. If you're listening in the Colonial Beach and Northern Neck area, Bay Aging is a great resource. For families who are caregiving for people, and they're actually, I'm putting a plug in for them, they're actually going to be starting up some family caregiving classes.
Perfect.
Very soon, and I think that's just wonderful. But I was briefly talking to her today, and she was saying, you know, in the business, we make care plans for everyone who comes into one of our facilities. That's just, you know, it's standard.
Yep.
Standard care for that person. But what families don't do is they don't make a care plan for that person. And they don't make a care plan for themselves. And I think that's a really good thing to think about. So a care plan kind of, you know, looks at a person's abilities and what their lifestyle was like and how to maintain that lifestyle as much as possible and allow them to live as independently as possible. That's what we do when somebody comes to a nursing facility. And then every 6 months, that's evaluated.
Yep. Or if there's a significant change.
Right. Right. If there's a significant change, then we need to go back to the care plan and say, okay, how are we going to change this?
Yep.
That's a really good thing for families, because if you guys come up with the care plan together, everybody knows what the ultimate goals are. You know, the goal is to maintain dad's independence as long as possible. The goal is to maintain dad's way of life and continue to do the things that he enjoys doing for as long as possible.
Right.
You have that to refer back to. Well, this is the care plan we came up with. So are you still on the care plan, or do we need to go back and revisit this care plan? It's not a bad idea. So we need to, you can look up what a care plan is online and look at what you think is significant to your situation. Every situation is unique. And then make up your own care plan.
Yeah, create an outline and share it, you know, because everyone's going to have different input. But I think understanding how you're all going to be feeling, it's a little bit different. You're doing a care plan with that person at the pinnacle. You know, we're all here to support that person and their needs. So we have to kind of set aside our own personal cares and needs, but you still have to understand that you're going to be emotionally impacted by doing that. So being you know, caring for each other in the caregiving group is also important.
Mm-hmm. Recognizing when someone's
mm-hmm.
overwhelmed or anxious and listen to them. Like if they're, I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
What's your plan when you see your big sister just
yeah.
telling you she's not sleeping and, you know, do you, yeah. do you listen or do you take action? You
right. know? Part of the care plan can be checking in with each other.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling? How did you do? Were you okay today? Or has it been a rough week? Be alert and aware to that too.
Right. I was very fortunate in that my sisters, you know, we all had kind of a schedule and most mm-hmm. of us lived close by and there were moments that I had to go to my sisters and say, I can't, like, yeah. I just need to,
I'm done right now.
Yeah. You know, and they would tag team, and we had friends in the community too that would check mm-hmm. in, who were close to my dad that said, hey, you know, do you need an hour today? And I'd be like, yes, yeah. you know, yes, I just need to go get in my car and drive around and, you know, listen to music or whatever. But yeah, come up with those little things. What right. do you do? So, you know.
Yeah, because you're part of being a caregiver means you're going to be dealing with a lot more guilt, self-doubt.
Yep.
You know, and your own emotions being changed and being impacted. You need to be aware of it.
Yes.
And share it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the care plan helps in some respects with the growing uncertainty because the situation, even if you get a plan in place that works today, that doesn't necessarily mean that same plan is going to work tomorrow. So you have to be aware that things will be changing and evolving and uncertainty mm-hmm. will definitely play a part.
Yes. Yes. So we have already run out yes. of time for this segment. Of course. We have. So we will end it with, you know, if you or somebody else, you know, is caring for a loved one, we are your care partners. If you have questions or concerns or need some guidance, you can reach us at yourcarepartners@wwer.org. Sorry about my dog in the background.
He's our mascot. It's okay. Yeah.
but thank you for listening to the podcast, and it looks like we're going to have to do another segment.
We will definitely be doing more segments. And if you reach out and have any requests, we will also respond and reply to those.
Yes. Yes. So don't feel alone. If you just need somebody to vent to, we get it.
We sure do.
Been there, done that.
You will survive. Just get yeah. some help. Always reach out. Keep reaching out for help. It's all around you. You can find it. All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye. Bye-bye. Just know you're not alone. 'Cause I'm gonna make this place yours.
If you or someone you know is caring for others, please feel free to share this podcast with them. You can listen online at wwer.org.
Please send questions, concerns, or suggestions for future topics to our email, carepartners@wwer.org.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.